Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast where we'll try not to lose any heads or arms during the show. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 89 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 5, Episode 10 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. entitled Past Life, which aired February 2nd, 2018.
And this episode was written by DJ Doyle and directed by Eric Lenoville. And this is going to end up, obviously, the first pod, and it was confirmed by Taltos on social media. Found several sources that pointed towards this being a pod and the next one also being a pod. So we're going to get a little break here, but it's definitely a nice place to wrap it up. I mean, lots of hanging threads, lots of questions, but also a close to our main villain, at least among other folks who had their end in this episode.
Yeah, and it's funny because this is an interesting episode for me because of the frenetic pace. And I understand why it was edited as it was edited, but it really had me jumpy. Of course, I can imagine it had the same effect on the characters in the story.
Right. Yeah, well, that's true. And for a finale, I guess that's sort of normal, but at the same time, it can be a little bit tough to focus on one thing at a time. But one thing I did notice that I want to mention up front during our show news segment is that the armless Yo-Yo Rodriguez is actually a comics reference. And I found this out from comicbook.com. It turns out in Secret Warriors 3, and maybe some of our listeners already know this, there was a storyline in which Daisy led the Secret Warriors in an engagement against the Gorgon, who was, of course, a thought-to-be-dead member of Hydra, one of their main heads that if you cut off one, two more spring up in its place. And there was a prophecy that said Yo-Yo would get hurt. And sure enough, Yo-Yo Rodriguez was severely injured and both of her arms were cut off in that issue. So I think that's kind of a nod because otherwise it really doesn't have a specific purpose. You'd think they would cut off her legs to keep her from running really fast, but arms it is. I guess Cassius had a reason for it. We just aren't going to know what it was. But, you know, something for the comics readers. I think it probably is immaterial for those people who don't follow the comics, but it's a nice little touch if you do. But that being said, let's go ahead and get into the episode at hand because there's a lot to discuss in our episode discussion.
All right, Mike, now you just mentioned Yo-Yo and, you know, having lost her arms to Kasai. So we'll hold that off for a little bit. But I mean, one of the things you said in the lead up is that we get some questions answered, but there are still some that we're kind of stumbling in the dark trying to figure out, well, where did this Yo-Yo come from?
Yeah, there is some question as to her origins and why she got captured and what she's been used for over the years, because it seems like she would only really be needed at the time when the other S.H.I.E.L.D. members arrive from their trip through time. So, yeah, what's she doing there? How'd she get there?
Right. I mean, did she come with the rest of the team and they're all dead? I find it hard to believe they would have left her behind. That's certainly Phil Coulson's motto, leave no one behind.
Well, I mean, some of them might have aged conventionally, and certainly there were some people who died along the way. There was nods to that in the Rewind episode or in the flashback episode where it was mentioned certain people were dead. So I assume that Yo-Yo somehow was captured along the way and was kept sort of eternally young through these repeated Tahiti treatments. And so she's unique in that way, whereas other people would have aged. She's been kept preserved in a way.
All right, makes sense. Now, talking about kept preserved, one of the things that I noticed, and this is a small thing, but that visual of Zephyr airborne, at least on the exterior, seemed to be in pretty good shape. But does Zephyr get atomized at the end?
Let's see. Are they on the Zephyr? I guess they are, aren't they?
See, I'm not sure, you know, that ending scene with Flint and Tess, are they in a trawler?
Yeah, they're in a trawler, and it was mentioned that there were many trawlers, so I guess this is a different one than the one we saw at the beginning.
Yeah, okay, so I just want to make sure, because I didn't have a good feeling about Zephyr.
No, I think you're right. Zephyr is gone in this version of the timeline anyway.
Okay. All right, now speaking of losing their mind, is that what's happening to Cassius? I mean, it's almost as if all of these things that are going wrong, I mean, certainly, you know, we've got his brother coming a few episodes back and laying everything out for him. But it really seems as if he's losing it. I mean, he finds, mourns, talks to the dead Sonar, which on the one hand didn't seem totally strange because we see him communicating with her non-verbally when she was alive.
Yeah, and he's still doing it. So that sort of tells you that it wasn't any kind of telepathic communication, but rather probably mostly in his head, interpreting her facial expressions. And now he's doing it again, where he's sort of using her as his own conscience in a way.
Yeah. And then I also find it interesting that he's told Kree biology is too complex to resurrect Sonara. And I'm wondering, well, didn't he already know that? Why does he even ask?
Yeah, it seems like it's just being mentioned for the audience's sake, because, of course, we know that this is something that can be used for humans, but it kind of just gives us an explanation of why they wouldn't just do that. So it's kind of like a little narrative device.
Well, but I also think it plays into what I was saying, that he does seem to be losing it. I mean, certainly we see him later drink the odium, and have we run across that before?
I don't believe so, no.
So I guess as I read somewhere on the internet, no, I'm sorry. I think it's Daisy that says it, the space version of PCP. So
yeah,
he takes that, and that just seems to be the beginning of the end.
Yeah, it's very fatalistic. I mean, don't you think it's like he's given up in a way?
Yeah, but he does seem to have, you know, some of his faculties. I mean, he understands that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s planning to return to their time, because if they're here, they haven't broken apart the Earth yet. But then again, that gets into that whole looping problem and timeline problem that we're all still trying to wrap our heads around.
Well, Cassius brings up a very interesting twist to it, because it's almost as though he would want them to go back to try and change things, because there's a mention, and this is a very cryptic thing for me, where he wants to maybe save the Earth for his father, almost implying as though the cracking apart of Earth kind of foiled his father's plans to bring about more Inhumans. And the sliver of Earth that's left is all that Quake was able to preserve. Or I guess you could also interpret it that that's all that she left, depending on whether you blame her or not.
Yeah. And he even says, with them out of the past, his father can have the planet for the taking.
Okay, well, maybe that speaks to his plans to get rid of all of them in this last-ditch effort to keep them from going to the past. I guess you could interpret it that way, too.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we see a lot of heroism in this episode. And I mentioned before, the pacing was pretty darn quick. And again, as you rightly point out, that's pretty de rigueur for either a mid-season finale or certainly a season finale. And I think it's reasonable to call this the mid-season finale. But Deke really stood out to me, and I don't think Faith is going to have any trouble coming up with some sassy lines this week, but my favorite is when Deke sees Tess, and that was also the scene where May had never seen Flint before.
Right. That was a nice encapsulation of May's character as well, when she just says, "Oh, you're Flint? Okay. Let's get the job done."
Exactly. So Deke sees Tess. "I thought you were dead.
You look good for dead."
Yeah. So, you know, that was, I know he said a few other things, but I thought that was pretty cool. But he goes to help Enoch secure the machine, and he knows what he's signing up for at this point. I mean, you could argue, well, he doesn't know the full details until he gets down into the room with Enoch, but you know, he gets it. I mean, if you guys get killed, then who saves the world?
I love that he says that, too, because no matter what you think about, and of course, Daisy brings this up in a big way, no matter what you think about how much they are to blame for what happens, they also are the only ones that could change it. I mean, it might be this loop that's been repeated several times, but who else is going to do it? That's the only choice they have.
Right. And he's been taught that his entire life. So he certainly bought into this scenario where S.H.I.E.L.D. is brought from the past to save the world. But now shippers will probably argue that Daisy insists on going with Deke because, you know.
Is anyone really shipping them, though? No one.
I don't think so. No. I just threw that in there. But I think certainly she wants to go with him because she realizes that it's more than likely a suicide mission. And of course, she's hell bent on not going back for obvious reasons. I mean, we think she's wrong, but still, that's the mindset she's got.
I just love that she even brings it up. I mean, just the idea that she would propose not going back to me is very noble and also makes all kinds of sense. I mean, we were wondering how that would take place in earlier episodes, and for it to come directly from her and Coulson forcing the issue was a really cool way to do it.
Yeah. And I like also what he says to her about not being impetuous, because in the short time they've known each other, he certainly gets that feel, and he's certainly correct in thinking that. And then he tells her, don't be good, be great. And you could argue, well, that's kind of corny. It doesn't really sound like Deke, but I still liked it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people who have opinions about whether or not Daisy is actually to blame, not just in the audience, but also among the other characters around her.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I did notice that's circulating around the internet in terms of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in this episode, whether or not Deke could possibly be alive
yeah.
and somehow survived that explosion. Now, I'm not going to say no, that it's impossible. Never say never. I will feel like it's a little bit of a deus ex machina if they do that.
Well, the only reason I would think people started thinking that is because of the fact that Tess asks Flint when they're in the trawler, are you sure that he blew up in that explosion? It almost as though she's posing the question on behalf of the audience, because I'm not sure people would have thought much if they had just seen the flash of light and only drew their conclusion based on that. It's because of what Tess said.
Okay. Now, the other question that I was thinking about has to do with Enoch.
Yeah.
Because Enoch came with Fitz from 2018. So there is no Enoch still on Earth in 2018. Right.
He came the long way. Yeah.
Okay, right. So if Deke survives, I guess it's possible Enoch survives. We'll see.
Maybe there's something with the time machine and Enoch's power supply that could rip a hole through time and space. Who knows, you know? I do think they left it open-ended, but I would be surprised if we see either one of them in the new storyline.
Well, and you figure if his batteries lasted 20,000 years, geez, I'd like one to just last a couple months. But
that's right.
Now, you mentioned Yo-Yo losing her arms in the Marvel comic world, and I don't know if she had any other injuries or not, but you also kind of alluded to why her arms and not her legs.
Yeah, it seems like they only did that because the comics readers would recognize it, because those who don't read the comics would probably be puzzled by that, don't you think?
Well, yes and no. I mean, on the one hand, I was thinking that, all right, you take her arms. Okay, fine. She can run to a door,
yeah.
but she can't open it.
Oh, okay.
And given that you still want to use her as your seer, the fact that she's got her legs means she doesn't have to be carried
okay.
anywhere.
That's true. Convenience.
Right. But then it looks at the larger question, why did Cassius take her arms? Was it simply to take away her power? Well, I thought that's what the limiter's for.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Why not just put a limiter in? And the other question for me is, what has he been using her for in the time prior to when S.H.I.E.L.D. showed up? Because we see that he didn't know how many S.H.I.E.L.D. members had showed up, so he couldn't have gotten too much information out about who would be arriving and when. So it does beg the question, how much has he been using her for? Perhaps he just resurrected her after a long stretch where she's been dead, And she's been in cold storage and just recently got resurrected once the crisis became known to Cassius. Because who knows? They say that she's been resurrected many times, but that doesn't mean that she's been alive the whole time. She could have been dead for stretches of time.
Right. Well, that's true. And then I wonder, did he cut her arms off as a means of getting information?
Yeah, could be.
As some form of torture.
It just looks like it's an old injury. It's not new. So obviously this cutting off the arms thing would have happened a long time ago. But I don't know. I guess we could speculate until the cows come home.
Yeah. Now, I guess we don't have to really come up with a name, but what are we referring to the two Elenas as? You know, how do we differentiate?
I don't know. Elena, young Elena and old Elena, maybe?
Okay. Well, which one's old? I guess the one without arms?
The repeatedly dead one. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So she tells her that she doesn't think they can stop what's going to happen. So in other words, given what she knows, and we don't really know what she knows, she doesn't think they can stop the Earth from being blown to bits.
Right. And she's having this very reflective conversation anyway, because every time a word leaves her mouth, she remembers it from the other side. So she's thinking back and saying, I'm trying to say different things, but I'm remembering that this is exactly what I said the first time I saw it. So I think she's having trouble in that sense too.
Okay. But like we've talked about with the time loop, what mistakes do they keep making? What can they fix this time? And that's certainly what old Elena wants to help her do. She just doesn't think it's really going to make any difference. But she does say it comes down to Coulson's choices, not Max. And you start thinking, okay, what choices does Coulson make? And of course, right after that, she mentions that Phil Coulson is dying. You have to let him. That wouldn't seem to be one of his choices. The choice I see is taking Daisy back.
Okay, well, you could see it that way. Or if you say that it is a choice of the team to let Coulson die rather than Coulson's choice himself. Or it could be Coulson's choice too, to tell them what's going on so that they can take it into account. Now, I guess we'll talk about later what's going on with Phil, but I think this is the one message that Elena was able to get across, at least to the audience, that it has something to do with Phil. And if Phil's little disease that we see is not treated in a specific way, to be very vague about it, then this whole time loop is going to happen again. So Elena was successful in that sense at communicating something to help them change it.
Okay, so saving Coulson is what's going to destroy the world. So obviously why, how,
right?
But of what is he dying?
Now, I think we have to give a nod to a hanging thread from season 4, and that is the deal that he made with Ghost Rider. Now, why it manifests itself this way, I don't know. But when you take into account that Ghost Rider is kind of a demonic force and put it together with a destroyed world where the magma is exposed, I mean, that's kind of an underworld-y type thing, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, with a show that's in its 5th season and that each year we wonder whether or not it's going to come back, and it does seem to be a show that just is not going to go down quietly.
Yeah.
Is this the end of Phil Coulson? I mean, are they preparing us for something here?
I think we're supposed to think that, because you do have that worry of whether or not this is the final season. But I just don't see them doing it. I mean, I just can't fathom them doing that.
Okay. Well, I love the fact that Daisy won't listen to reason. He just ices her. And I also love even more when May tells him, you know, she's never going to forgive you for that.
Exactly.
And then his line, well, there is hope. So I think he's overstating the reality of the situation. I think the relationship he has with Daisy is strong enough to overcome, because I think we all know she didn't do it.
Exactly. It's got to be something where she was trying to head something off at the pass and ended up in the epicenter of it because she failed to prevent it, not because she caused it. So we'll just have to wait and see that real time, because I have the feeling this is going to be an 11th hour solution. I mean, a lot of people on the Facebook group were speculating about a change that might have already happened here in this episode. to make things different when they go back. I don't think there has been a change yet. I think everything has played out like it's played out perhaps in every single loop, and that we're not going to start seeing changes or decisions that will be very fateful until we get back from the hiatus.
Okay. Now, one of the things we've talked about all season is the darker fits. And on the one hand, it's easy to be taken aback by Fitz and his cold demeanor. I mean, killing the Kree without compunction. Now, you could argue they're the Kree, but you know, the mantra of Phil Coulson seems to always be disable, not kill, although they've certainly had to kill a lot of Kree here. But this little thing with the piano wire or whatever it was that he used to decapitate those three Kree, that was pretty gruesome. But then, and it didn't register with me right away, you know, it was Gemma's plan to have Flint throw those rocks that, you know, shatter the window, and then the Kree get sucked out into space.
Oh, really? Was it her plan? Because that's very notable, considering she did express a bit of dismay when Fitz did his really cool wire trick where it sliced off parts of their heads. So why did she have those misgivings?
Well, you know what? I wonder whether her misgivings were because he did it in front of Flint.
Oh, okay.
And I think they're all really aware that he's a young guy. I mean, he's, I think, what is he, 16? I think we learned earlier.
Either 15 or 16, yeah.
So he's a young, young man amongst all these adults who are as worldly and otherworldly as it gets. So I think that was her reaction. But I did find it interesting that Simmons, because I think when you think about it, and again, I read this somewhere, you know, over the past few days, the death that they would feel physically in outer space is much more cruel than just an instant decapitation.
That's true. So there is that. Her plan was a little bit more drawn out death.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned the odium, and you know, you confirmed that we really haven't run across that at all, but it does seem to be some sort of like PCP-like drug that just gives him immense power and just becomes a raving lunatic.
Right. He uses it with the trainer guy named Ty as well to let us see how its effects might be used, but it also seems to be fatal. Like, in order to take this, you're certainly giving yourself some time to decimate things, but also you've just signed your own death warrant as well.
Well, right. And then I guess finally, you know, the construction of, they keep referring to it as a machine, I guess the machine that's going to power the portal, mm-hmm. and its opening to send them back. So, you know, it comes down to Enoch. And I love, you know, when the Kree come in, they're searching room to room, you know, no human activity in here.
Yeah, exactly.
And then does Deke refer to him as a robot later? I can't remember if he does.
Probably.
Yeah, somebody does. I'm like, he's not a robot. But I just really like those two working together, because Deke is so sarcastic and Enoch is so just matter of fact, pragmatic. Not that the sarcasm goes over his head, but watching those two work together was just, for me, one of the most fun aspects of this episode. And it was a dark episode. I mean, you know, there is a lot of death and certainly a lot of disappointment. And what happened to the young servant girl that they save?
Yeah, I think I'm wondering if she was there for more than just to give Simmons one of those little earwigs that she could then use against Cassius in his final moments. Because is that the only reason that they included her, or was it for something else? Because it looked like she and Flint went off together
hand in hand.
Exactly. It seemed like there was maybe a little bit more to it. And she's the one that also said witch trawler. So it kind of let you know that there was more than one trawler that they could use. But other than that, I didn't really see her purpose.
Well, because then we see Tess and Flint at the controls of the trawler. Now, I guess, granted, the girl could be
in the back.
So, but I guess I like that scene. I mean, again, he's such a sweet guy that's had all this stuff thrown at him. And to have somebody that's his age, he seemed to know her or certainly be aware of her. So, again, it's probably irrelevant.
Except for that little earwig that Simmons was getting.
Right. But then the question, does he possess the power to put the Earth back together?
Yeah, that's the big question, because here he's like, okay, so now we know, yes, his purpose was to put the monolith together. But then Tess seems to indicate, I don't know if she's just joking, here's the blueprint, let's get started. And maybe that is something that they could do moving forward. If the loop weren't to be able to be broken, maybe he could start humanity fresh now that Cassius has been taken out of the picture, by slowly but surely bringing a planet back together. Now, of course, that would take a long time, but it sort of gives you hope that humanity is not out of commission altogether, regardless of what happens in the past.
So then what happens, Mr. Time Travel?
Yeah. What's the point? Exactly.
I mean, well, if they go back to the past,
yeah,
and the Earth hasn't been destroyed and they save it from being destroyed,
then what's the point of Tess and Flint having that conversation?
Well, but can he put it together? Is that still, do we have two Earths?
Well, I don't know, because I've been working with the idea that whatever they end up changing, and I assume they will change something, that it will erase this timeline altogether, such that the whole lighthouse community doesn't even exist, that it just is Earth moving forward as usual, perhaps still running into Cassius's father. And maybe we'll see that plot line in the second half of the season, but certainly no reason to have the trawler and things like that going on with the destroyed chunks of Earth.
Okay. Obviously, anytime Mac gets to use the shotgun axe, that's a bonus. The fact that he uses it to take down Cassius, double bonus.
Yeah.
And I noticed that he gets up and walks away, and the shotgun axe is still in Cassius. I'm thinking, like, dude, is he going to leave it there?
I guess so.
Well, no, he didn't. You notice later he did have it with him.
Oh, okay. He wouldn't leave it behind. But yeah, that was kind of brutal. I mean, the fact that he was able to even shove it that far through, but he thought Yo-Yo was dead at that point. And what a great moment it was for him to see that it wasn't true. And there was also, I think this was another scene that caused some confusion on Facebook, where Yo-Yo said that, "I'm sorry you had to see that," but I guess an explanation for what exactly was going on there, we'll have to wait until later for that, for Mac.
And I like the fact that he really doesn't question, well, what the heck is going on? What did I, you know, he's,
I'll tell you again, later.
Right, right. So great epilogue. One of the best of the season, I really think. You know, we talked about Flint and Tess on the trawler, and they realize they've been given a second chance. And I guess as we were talking, what kind of power does he have? Because that's sort of the inference that things need fixing. As she hands him that little tiny globe, well, here's your blueprint.
Yeah, and I guess what we could say about that also is, if we are dealing with a multiple timeline scenario where this time continues to exist, even if they are able to make it branch off in the past once they get home, then it kind of gives you hope that this timeline will get better from here.
Yeah, but, you know, really good episode. I'm glad they ended it like they ended it. So pod number one in space, pod number two on Earth. But I made a mistake. I didn't mean to. That's a lie. I did mean to watch the previews.
Uh-huh.
So it looks like it's not necessarily going to be a smooth landing for the crew once they get back to their own time.
And I guess we knew that would probably happen with the brief amount of time we saw with the government operatives that are in power and trying to figure things out back there. So we'll have to see how it plays out. There's a few guest stars also that we'll have to talk about when the time comes, but I guess we got a month off until then and lots of time to speculate on what's to come and what we've seen so far.
Right. And how much time has elapsed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Since they've been gone. Well, we'll have to wait and see. But like you said, there was plenty of funny moments in all the darkness with all the deaths. So Faith did have some good ones to pick from, and we'll see which ones you guys vote on. But first, let's start with the winner from last week and turn it over to Faith.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the Colsass Report. This week's report should honestly be the Deke Sass Report, because he had a slew of sass going on. But I've narrowed it down to four choices. Before I get to those, here's the surprising, at least to me, winner from last week. Maybe I can help you with that.
The sensation of death is one that I have yet to experience.
Maybe I can help you with that.
And now for this week's contenders. Number one, you think there'd be a law.
Guns, man, it's like cheating. You shouldn't give these to anyone who's not a really, really good person.
You think there'd be a law.
Number two, wardrobe malfunction.
You okay?
Just a wardrobe malfunction. You?
Yeah. Turns out they have PCP in space.
Number three, pep talk.
You're one guy against the Kree. You'll be massively outgunned.
Kind of trying to do the whole hero thing here, man. Is that your pep talk?
And number four, almost nice knowing you.
It was almost nice knowing you.
You're a pain in my ass.
Did I miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. Please be sure to join Tautos when AOS returns in March in tweeting your favorites to FBMC with the hashtag ColeSass. To vote for this week's contenders, please visit facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM. While you do that, I'm going to find Mac and give him a big hug and a lot of painkillers. Have a great week, everybody.
All right. Well, here we go. Lots of time to vote on this one. So get those votes in on the Facebook group. And we'll announce the winner, of course, when we come back from a hiatus. And thanks, as always, to Faith for the ColeSass report. But we got a lot of feedback, and I'm glad people took advantage of the extra day. Had some festivities going on at my house during the Super Bowl, so we weren't able to record on Sunday night. But that gave people some time to write in their thoughts. And we'll go ahead and start with John, who did miss the deadline last week, so I'm glad he was able to get in on things this week. He says, 4 weeks till doomsday. Can I just say I missed the mini pods? They were a bit more like sliders and a whole lot easier to digest. What a send-off. Bon voyage, agents. I was sure everyone would be dead by the time they finally time-warped home. Seems I'm at odds with a few people, though, over what they revealed. Selective hearing? I thought Cassius said his father described the Earth as a blue jewel of the galaxy and mentioned how he was denied his prize, which I thought for certain meant his father was somehow mixed up in nearly obliterating Earth. And he might be, John, you know, I think that's still a possibility. That, and he said something about Quake saving a small sliver of the world. My biggest prediction, however, is that it was Elena stopping Mac from opening a portal to hell to receive the fire from the sky instead of impacting on Earth that led to its destruction. Oh, a very interesting theory. I could have sworn I heard her say she should have let Mac burn. Daisy is shirking off Quake with a vengeance now, and looks like leaving the inhibitor in place may lead to her not being there in time to batter up. Though in the end, on the Quinjet ramp with the bracelets, it looks like she was going to. I guess if she was late to the game, she wasn't in time to stop it. And I think that's definitely the case, John. But was in time to save a sliver of the world. That would be interesting if it was a saving rather than a what was left that was blamed on Quake, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, and I also like her statement to Coulson that you and I both know how it's going to play out. We're going to get back there. There's going to be some catastrophe. You're going to find a way to restore my powers. So
exactly, yeah. And then it will be prophecy fulfilled. Right, yeah. Exactly. I feel certain the architects of our dread and fear, this pod, will want to show us Shatterday, but also find a way to prevent it. It's kind of what they do. Not sure how they're going to do that without splitting the apple. I mean, we're vested in the future with Enoch, Deke, Flint, and Tess. Their sacrifices and continued existence depend on the continuity of the timeline now. The only way I can see is maybe if they come from the future to help save the past at peril to themselves. The portal shattered when they left the past the last time, but even if it did up the line, Flint is still there to put it back together again. And I'm not so certain Enoch and Deke are roast toast. Enoch said they would be atomized, but that assumes all the energy was released into the surrounding environment. The portal is the best Stargate around. It was bound to soak up most, if not all, that energy, singed perhaps, but they could have got out of it and could figure out something further up the line to help. I kind of like that theory, John, that maybe there's an opening for at least Deke. I can't see Tess and Flint, but you know, maybe there is something to the flash of light that they left open-ended on purpose. 4 weeks. Man, time travel is a pain in the past, especially taking the slow way around. Very good. Thank you very much for your thoughts, John. And I think you have a lot of good ones in there.
All right. Taltos checked in as usual and says Coulson was slumped against the wall and not moving as Daisy finished the fight with Ty. When Coulson climbed to his feet, his hand was clutched to his chest. Then a few seconds later, he seemed perfectly fine. There's no way that that was just a wardrobe malfunction, nice Super Bowl reference, yeah. Especially given the veiny chest thing we see later.
Yeah, that was kind of the foreshadowing of what was to come. Kind of cool.
Yeah. Did Coulson make some sort of rapid healing deal with the spirit of vengeance, perhaps connected with why he's dying? If Elena was the only inhuman Cassius had when he started his experiments, does that mean all the other inhumans in the lighthouse can be traced back to her DNA?
Yeah, very good. Possibly.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure what the implication of that is, but it's it's a cool theory. Cassius seemed to imply that it was his father coming to claim Earth that ultimately led to it being fractured.
Mm-hmm.
It was pointed out to me that when Adelan was collapsing in the Inhumans finale, the throne started pulsing with a blue light like a beacon. I'm really not trying to draw the Inhuman series into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but that does seem very coincidental, especially given the connection we know exists between the Inhumans and the Kree. Deke was staring at the monolith fragment when he saw a bright flash of light. A flash just like the team saw when the monolith activated and at the exact same time. Did Deke get transported back in time with the team?
Yeah, I think we're supposed to think that, or maybe that's just the hardcore fans that love to speculate on things, but it did seem kind of visually tied in together.
Well, and again, Deke is such a great character, and we all know, those of us that have been watching serialized television for a long time, sometimes the showrunners don't know what an impact a character's going to have.
Yeah.
And then they end up keeping them around. So, I don't know. I love them.
Yeah. Sad to see him go. All right. And next we heard from Agent Coco, who's becoming a downright regular now. She says, "Hey guys, I have mixed feelings about this episode. It seemed kind of anticlimactic, considering all that the team has gone through. The special effects were cool and gruesome, like when Ty's eyes turned black from drinking the odium, or when those Kree's throats were slit by that string that Fitz put up. Gemma looked really taken aback. Even seeing my beloved Yo-Yo without arms was a lot to take in. But seeing Flint use his powers was awesome, and watching the monolith come together was a great visual. I like seeing Flint use his powers so well, thanks to Gemma's excellent coaching. Gemma is an Inhuman Whisperer. Her sense of patience and compassion helps a lot. Also, the way she explains things so matter-of-factly. It was nice to be reminded of this part of her character. I still don't understand what Enoch is or was. I thought he was an alien, but since he runs on battery, that makes him some type of android, right? Either way, RIP, he went out like a true soldier." And I do think the Chronicom idea is supposed to be kind of ambiguous, almost like a robot that didn't get built by someone, but rather sprang into being, you know, kind of like a race of machines, that kind of thing. A part of me imagines that Deke could have also ended up being transported along with the team, because it seems like he became part of the portal. And there we go. A lot of people are going with this theory. So what do you think is making Coulson sick? Is it the deal he made with Ghost Rider way back when catching up with him? Or some delayed side effect of the Tahiti project, and I think it's probably the former. Or just that odium getting under his skin during the fight. Well, it was black. Either way, this explains why he wasn't in any of those past future scenes. I refuse to think he dies, though. So here's my complaint. I don't want to see Daisy being forced to choose between herself and the team anymore. She has been the martyr slash victim in an epic way twice. First with her parents, and then with Hive. She's a great character, a badass hacker, an awesome fighter who has been through a lot. I want to see her more empowered and confident. Why would she believe she blew up the world based on myths, rumors, and that little piece of video footage? I don't like when she is shown as guilt-ridden, angsty, and destined to suffer or do bad things because she has proved she is a good person over and over, also devoted to the team. And I didn't like the way Coulson iced her. I know she is like a daughter to him, and I know they didn't have time for chit-chat, but I wish they had done that scene differently, because we have seen some version of it in other episodes. And I also want Daisy to determine what happens in her own life. That's a very good point, but I do think we're supposed to hate Coulson a little bit for what he did.
Oh, see,
it's going to come back to haunt him.
Oh, see, I disagree. I think he did what he had to do.
Oh, no, you know.
You know, to save her.
He knows there's going to be consequences is what
I mean. I agree. And I guess as Agent Coco reminds us, Daisy is the consummate computer hacker. So for her to just simply buy into that video footage of her walking along in that one scene and that's the proof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Got to agree with you there, Agent Coco. We have seen different sides of May, Gemma, Fitz, and like them all, she has been through a lot. It's now her turn to be a little different. Okay, rant over. The look on Mac's face when he thought Yo-Yo was dead was heartbreaking. I felt bad for him, and it seemed like it took her forever to show up. I love that Gemma got to be a part of what took Cassius down. I said, yes, when she slid that thing in his ear and said, silence. I also love that we got to hear the young black girl's voice in the end. Also, Flint and Tess floating in peaceful space, smiling. That made for a happy ending for the people of the future. But did the whole team make it back? The suspense that comes with having to wait for a whole month to see who made it back is too much. What are some time travel shows or films you recommend watching during the break? Thanks as always for the great podcast. Peace and be well. Agent Coco out. And Agent Coco, we can make all kinds of recommendations. The most recent great time travel shows are both on Netflix, and that's Travelers and Dark, both of which come highly recommended. But there's also, of course, 12 Monkeys and Continuum, which I've also podcasted about in the past. So I recommend those and check out our podcast. Yep.
All right. Skimmins checked in and says, a great scene between the yo-yos. Nat especially killed it as zombie Elena. Okay, I like zombie Elena. I wish... I'm going to miss Deke's banter with the group. It was realistic, but also humorous. It was my favorite thing about him. Again, I have to wonder if the darkness in Fitz will affect his relationships, especially with Gemma. To be fair to him, it was smart to set a trap, and Gemma has had her dark moments as well, example, wanting to kill Ward in season 2. But Fitz has showcased an abundance of it as late, so I wonder if it's just too much for her right now. Sadly, they'll probably still put Fitzsimmons together romantically while they are engaged. But this could be a way to give them a bit of drama to slow play the wedding for those shippers. Yay for Daisy using her computer skills. I've missed that. Wouldn't it make more sense to take zombie Elena's legs, given that's part of her strength?
Exactly.
Gemma Simmons, Inhuman Whisperer. A gorgeous space scene with Flint and the Rocks. Yay for Gemma getting her revenge on Cassius. The only way it would have been better is if she finished him herself.
Yeah, it was good to have her in there. And didn't someone else use the Inhuman Whisperer idea for Gemma? So
they did. I think it was Agent Coco.
Or one of the earlier ones, yeah.
So close to having an epic cliffhanger, had they done a generic promo just announcing the return date, it would have been. But if you watched it like me, it did kill some of the tension with a few clips. And that's what I was alluding to her at the beginning. Granted, we knew they'd all make it back most likely. It could be we just don't see Gemma, Mac, and Elena in the opening of the return for suspense. But I kind of wish they let that drama build for the mood instead of showing us that answer in the promo. A cute ending with Tess and Flint at the very end, though. An okay episode overall. If we assume this is the first pod of the season, I have to give it just a 4 out of 10 at best because I still don't get the point of their mission. Yes, they took down the Kree and saved people, but was that their goal or was it just to see the possible future to stop it?
That's a good question, because what purpose would it have to save the people of the future if they're just going to erase them? Or if we go with the branching timeline theory, maybe they did have to do that in addition to seeing the possible future. So that's an excellent philosophical question, Skimmins.
Now, for me, while there were good moments in this pod, it sadly overall felt like filler. Not the worst of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've seen, but not the best either. I don't know if it's going to be an option, but I'm already voting Daisy saying, feel that, in the SAS poll.
Yeah, there were definitely some good ones. So, all right. Well, thank you very much, Skimmins. Some great thoughts there. Next, we heard from Don. Don says, pretty good episode for going into break. Some points. Number one, that was far and away the most unusual time loop presentation ever. The conventional wisdom is show, not tell. Here, there was virtually no show. It was almost all tell. Never seen anything like it. If I understood things correctly, they are still in the loop when they go back, so nothing is solved yet. And yes, that's the case. Two, no pods, it appears. Well, at least not in the way they did it in season 4. It felt more like a part one of two or maybe three. And yeah, I think it is part one of two in this case. In any case, it appears that what they are bringing back is mostly knowledge and that inhibitor in Daisy's neck. But whatever the knowledge is, and I have a theory, they don't know that they know it.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's like it's hidden in what they've experienced so far. I like that idea. So I have a theory that the point of the time loop was to bring the gravitonium to their attention. Ah, I like this. And try and stop them from fixing Coulson when he starts to die. Other than that, can you point out anything they said or did or saw that looks potentially important and helps avert Armageddon? Because I didn't. Yeah, so we still have the gravitonium in the mix. We've got Ghost Rider now in the mix, so maybe a combination of the two. We'll see. Coulson is publicly wanted now. At this point, the Avengers either know he's alive or they lose all credibility. Yeah, we have to keep mentioning that they should be calling Coulson in on one of the future movies. Number four, they explained, sort of, why Kree can't be brought back from the dead like Coulson was. This makes the Kree a tad bit less scary. It always bothered me how blasé Cassius was about the time travel in the early episodes. One good thing they did was to show that it was due to Robin and Elena. I missed the Coulson is dying business and the you've got to let him go on my initial watching. If I understand it correctly, this is a key to exiting the loop, which is on the face of it, distressing. I bet there's a twist to it. Oh, no doubt. See you after we get tired of snow angels in Korea. Well, thank you very much, Don. And I think we'll probably all be chomping at the bit by the time that time comes.
Okay. All right. Well, we also heard from Carmelita, who says, hey, guys, took me a while to binge and catch up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just in time to leave some feedback at the end of this pod about time travel and paradoxes, how I missed 12 monkeys during the hiatus. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. managed to pack so much action and emotional character moments into episode 10, I'm still trying to process it all. The most shocking moment for me was Seer Yo-Yo revealing that trying to save Coulson is the real catalyst for the destruction of the Earth. It's probably a stretch, but I wonder if the deal with Ghost Rider that Coulson and Robbie Reyes mentioned at the end of season 4 could come into play.
Oh, not a stretch at all. Definitely what I think, too.
Maybe as a way to save him while still avoiding the event that blows the Earth apart. Don't know how, but I just can't imagine Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. without Coulson, so I'm really hoping the team can find a way to break the loop without losing him. As always, thanks for a great podcast.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Carmelita in a while, and she's a regular contributor over at 12 Monkeys Uncaged, so I'm glad to see her chiming in on another time travel plot. So thanks very much, Carmelita, and thanks very much to all of you guys who contributed thoughts this week. That definitely sort of reinforces some of my thoughts and adds a little bit to the mix as well, so that's great. But that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox, and we'll be away for a while, but keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @shield_GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm, which is also where you can vote on the Coulson report.
And Mike and I will be back on March 2nd with our discussion of episode 11 of season 5 entitled All the Comforts of Home. But remember, after the episode airs, head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or call 304-837-2278.
And if you get a chance during the hiatus, please rate and review The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts to let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And we'll see you on Earth, Sandboxers.